are the contracts, and really that to sort of bring it together, I think that there's going to have to be a work back from retail. Say, okay, what's the demand? Because
there's four areas that we try to put together with our different consultants, and both Tyson and I have people that we consult with all over the country, but we put together a pretty solid team that experts in licensing, compliance.
Hey guys, it's Mandy with Global Hemp Association. I wanted to say thank you so much for joining. I'm excited about the opportunity to build a relationship and connect this supply chain. I mean, after all, that's why we started the association. Our association was built on the foundation of connecting supply chain, building relationships, and helping you grow your business. Anyone from farmers, manufacturers, and distributors, people that are passionate about the supply chain, and those creating products selling into biofuels, plastics, textiles, construction, and building materials.
Hi guys, thank you so much for joining today.
Hello.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you everybody else that's listening live. I'm excited about this interview, and both Tom and Tyson are fantastic for the industry and doing great things in agriculture and as a service to the industry. So I'm excited to make this connection. I want to give a real quick shout out to all of our sponsors for our seed trials and remind everybody that we're going to be giving or doing a presentation, a panel discussion about our trials and the data that we received and the impact that we've been able to have for both farmers and industry at NoCo. So I hope to see everybody there. Tyson, Tom, are you guys going to be traveling to NoCo this year?
Don't know yet.
Okay, good, Tyson. Well, at least I know I'll see you. Tom, if you end up over there, let's connect. Awesome. Well, my computer is a little bit catchy, or so if for some reason I'm bleeping out, let me know, guys. I don't know if it's my Wi-Fi or what's going on, but Tyson, before I blabble on too much, I'd love to hear an intro from you just about who you are, what you do, and how'd you get into this industry, and then maybe we'll let Tom give a quick intro, but I'd really like to kind of hear what you're doing first, Tom. How it's working. Tyson,
that sounds great. So I'm sorry, did I interrupt you? My bad.
Okay, I lost you in a second. Okay, make sure it wasn't my Wi-Fi. So, we'll do a quick intro with you, Tyson, and then we'll hand it over to Tom and then hear a little bit about what you've got going on and then pass it back over. Does that work? Just make it flow?
Sure. Sounds great.
Awesome.
Thank you. It's a little bit catchy on this end, so excuse that if it's mine as well. Maybe two bad internets will make for one great live stream. But in any event, my name's Tyson Daniel. I'm a lawyer in Roanoke, Virginia. I run the Daniel Law Firm and also Virginia Cannabis Lawyers, PL, excuse me, it's a tongue twister. And we do all kinds of work here in the Commonwealth for people that are interested in both sides of the plant, really. The fiber and grain industrial market, and from my perspective, has really always been the best play for generational wealth, people pursuing it, that is. Of course, the sexy disco ball that is the psychoactive side, it has a lot of people captivated as well. And so, there's a whole lot of attention on that, but I think that the tortoise in the fabled race really is the fiber and grain side. So excited to be part of Global Hemp Association, and look forward to being out in Colorado for NoCo this year to meet some of the other industry players. I'd be happy to talk more about what we do, but I don't want to hog the intro, so I'll kick it back over to you.
I have a quick question for you real quick. Can you talk a little bit about your background? Like how did you get into cannabis? Obviously you mentioned the wealth side, but you have an extensive background in law that I think really plays to your ability and your connections. And so, I'd be interested in sharing a little bit about your background.
Yeah, thanks for asking. So I came out of law school, went straight into the public defender's office. I knew that I wanted to do trial work, but I also wasn't really interested in carrying a briefcase for someone else, and I wanted to get kind of right into it. had I known what was in store for me, maybe I would have thought better about it. But in any event, I spent a couple of years at the public defender's office, and then went on to the capital defense unit, where we did nothing but capital murder cases where the Commonwealth was seeking the death penalty. And so you can imagine that those were pretty stressful cases. I did that for nothing but that, exclusively that, for about 5 years. I started an apparel company, if you can imagine such a bizarre thing, as a stress reliever. And we got licensed with universities around the country. And that was no accident. That was something, once we got into it, we realized that we had something pretty cool. And we connected with a licensee with Apple, and were making garments for that would hold the iPod or connect to the iPod, wearable electronics, basically. The first version of it back in, one of the first versions of it back in, I guess, 2007. So I got into licensing and understood intellectual property, mostly from my business side. When I was in law school, I actually had a contract with it was Aramark Corporation, actually, to do food service in the Richmond Coliseum. We were slinging iced tea and lemonade, and we had the license to do, or the permission to do, cookies and fudge and other confections. So we would bring people over with the smell, which was a loss leader, and then, do very well on the iced tea and lemonade. So I had that business sort of acumen, or at least Jones, acumen is up for others to judge, I suppose, when I was in law school, and then, sort of acted on that when I was at the Capitol office, or when I was leaving, really. And so I did that for a while. That took a hit. We had a supply chain hit that caused a cash flow disruption that we couldn't really recover from. So about 2012, I came back full time to the law, back into the courtroom, back doing, ugly cases again. So I guess in 2020, I finished the last capital case, and came back to the office and said, I'm not doing any more criminal defense cases. And of course, people said, you're crazy. And I said, well, maybe so. I had been a member of Normal for many years. And So I saw the green wave, coming east, and had been sort of prepared for it, preparing for it. So that's how I got into, that's how I started the cannabis practice here. And, that was something I think a lot of people were scratching their heads about, because it was really right as things were opening up here. And, it would have been unusual for lawyers to advertise that way.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to come back. So I want to keep talking about what we're doing, what your involvement is in the industry, and both cannabis and hemp side in Virginia. But Tom, how did you and Tyson connect? What's?
I'm not sure. We were talking about a product that we're both involved in called Agro, and also a product called Danalyte. So we kind of hooked up through that, and I think I was introduced to him by someone I was working with out of Florida that gave me a name, said, you got to talk to this guy, and I did, and been grateful ever since. So we've met finally in person after talking on the phone numerous times, and had a great time with each other's company, and we kind of complement each other and what we do. My background primarily in commercial real estate, focusing on farmland and land sales, mainly in the Midwest, but can do land sales all over the country. And then also own farmland. I had a farm in Iowa that I sold several years ago, and I still have a farm in Missouri. So I've got a background not only in the brokerage side, but in the active farming of that land. And in that process of being involved in farming and growing grain crops, got involved with a group out of Kansas City who Tyson's familiar with, that introduced me to a product mainly to prevent mold and aflatoxin on corn. But then we started to see some great benefits to cannabis and hemp. And so that's what leads me to join the Global Hemp Association and enjoy, you know, the communication there. It's been great.
Awesome. So Tom, talk to me a little bit more about your background, right? In the farming and ag side. Now you and Tyson are involved in AgriLite and Dan and Light. Maybe instead of more about your background, talk to me about AgriLite. What is it? How does it work?
Sure. It's a real simple organic product. It's a hypochlorous acid, but we refined it a little bit in our process. It's really made from a salt brine, and then it's again totally organic. You can spray it on your skin, you can breathe it in, it won't hurt animals, plants, humans. So it's totally safe to use, and you can use it as a seed wash, plant wash, to increase the productivity of your crop. It's used a lot in agriculture, mainly for seed wash on non-HMO plants, because it is 100% organic, and we got a lot of traction in that area.
Excellent. Okay, so of course, this has me thinking. Your intro gave me a couple of other questions. I don't know if Tyson, I'm going to come back because I'm hooked on this AgriLite and what Tom did in the past. But you also mentioned site selection, right? Talk to me about, you know, what that looks like in the land development and what you do there.
Sure, and I'll relate that to the hemp industry, because that's in the last several years I've been kind of focused on finding land for someone that says, hey, I want to get into growing hemp. Say, okay, first of all, get yourself educated on the laws, and that's where Tyson can be helpful, on the state laws and the legalities of growing hemp. There are some, even though with the farm bill that was passed, every state can grow hemp, but there's still a lot of regulations. But in finding a site, you have to look at not only the location near where you live possibly, but where it's going to be a good area to grow hemp. Almost anywhere where you can grow corn or grain, you can grow hemp, but it does require a fair amount of water, so you have to make sure that you have water rights or water availability. If you want land that's center pivot irrigated, or irrigated land is best. Ground irrigation is really better for growing hemp, or you see the large center pivot irrigation systems all over the country. Mm-hmm. Those are fine, but ground irrigation is a little bit better. We talk to the different seed providers, and for that region, okay, this is the best seed for that area. There's a location to market, which is really important. As we're finding out, and Tyson and I were working on a deal where the transportation cost of the hemp to the processor was more than what the processor was getting, or the grower was getting paid. So that's a huge issue. You've got to have your production as close to the processors as you can to cut down on that transportation cost. So those are all factors that enter into the land or the site selection side of things.
Okay, so talking about, you know, the business model and things like that, Tyson, what's going on in Virginia, and what's the interest look like right now there?
Well, frankly, most of it is still in the flower side. Yeah. You know, people are growing for extraction. And, you know, the contracts that are coming across my desk have to do with huge grows around the country. But of course, to Tom's point, they're geographically relevant to where the facilities, you know, are going to be processing the biomass. So, you know, finding Virginia farmers to ways for them to grow for extraction for somebody in, let's say, you know, Louisiana, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. One of the things that we don't have here, in at least in the way that we need it, is infrastructure. So that's one of the things, you know, you and I, Mandy, have talked about. How do we get some of the equipment here so that we can actually incentivize the growers, so that we can actually work our way backwards from retail. And I suppose that's one of the connections with my background that makes some of this all come together. It was difficult trying to convince Dick Sporting Goods, for example, that they sell electronics. And, you know, when we were selling wearable electronics, you know, that was, you know, that's a difficult sell for a brand new product category. And yeah. So, well, how do they create how do you figure out which buyer is buying it when you've got a brand new, you know, category that's maybe a blend of two? And that's what's happening now in the industrial hemp space as well. So from the retail side, there are things that are still being fleshed out, because the actual aisles, the shelf space in the stores for the, you know, the doormats that are going to be made of hemp fiber, for the protein bars that are going to be made from seed cake, you know, all have to have shelf space, and then the buyers need to know, you know, that's in my bailiwick, and you know, I'm going to get my bonus based on how well I do buying the right protein bar that people like, that's, you know, hemp based. So having that experience, I suppose, with the wearable electronics and coming with a new product category, you know, conversely convincing Best Buy that they sell apparel. Well, in a university town, a college town, they do. They sell little beanies and stuff that have the college logos on it. That's one way to get in, and that's how we were able to create that category. Likewise, I suppose, you know, there's a CBD wave that you can ride in to these stores that they're already looking. They've already got shelf space for. Most of it is, you know, impulse buy kind of stuff, but you know, there's really a place for that. How do we connect the growers who have had bad experiences with growing flower hemp to processors in the fiber and grain side? I mean, it's just a different mentality. It's a different crop, one that many people, myself included, until not very long ago, have never seen.
Well, and it's really like growing strawberries versus corn, right? Or an indoor flower compared to an outdoor wheat, right? I mean, really are different crops, different mindsets, different people on that side. When we talk about shelf space and your connections at moving product into consumer goods, talk to me, because it sounds like there's so much opportunity in Virginia from, like you said, we've got this cannabis market, so maybe not so developed on the farm side. And we know that there's a few processors like FiberX, for example, that's coming in, you know, to process really on textiles. But it sounds like you have customers and connections that are interested in that consumer good development and, you know, creating that shelf space.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The shelf space is already there. And in fact, one of the reasons that the AgriLite, Danalite thing has, you know, taken a position that it has in my existence, my life, in addition to the fact that Tom's cool and I enjoy hanging out with him, and we've got a, you know, sort of a good larger group that we work with, but it's a fantastic product. But it also works across the board, and one of the things that, you know, it's a product that can go in retail stores and should be in retail stores, but it also helps build out that shelf space, because it's, you know, it's a seed wash, whether you're using, you know, where you're using it on a big ag level or whether you're using it for a home grow level. because these aren't treated seeds. And, you know, to Tom's point about center pivot, you know, being able to clean, flush the lines to use the product is pretty fun. So really, I took my own advice, which was get into the pick and shovel side of things.
Love it. Hey, Tom, I've got another question about the seed wash. It's not only seed wash. We've talked about it also being used to help with, say, root rot or mold. Can you talk about how specifically it's used and the impact for the cannabis and hemp industry?
Sure. The mold issue in some areas, some grow regions, it's as harvest or post-crop. And I know of growers that have lost an entire crop of hemp because they put it in a warehouse that was moist and humid, and it was infested with mold, and no one will buy it. They ended up having to destroy the crop. So you can lose an entire crop if it gets infested with mold or aflatoxins. So we, just before harvest, we suggest spraying your crop with AgriLite. And then once again, when it's in storage, before you get it to market, to spray it again if you see an outbreak of mold, and you can save an entire crop. So it's very effective. We've people that have tried other products against mold, and then they tried AgriLite, and they said, this is the only product we found that actually works. It's actually 100 times more effective than bleach on mold, but it doesn't leave any residual material on the crop itself. So it's very.
I just was to add real quick, you know, the thing that is most amazing to me, and I think probably also gives clarity to how it can be so powerful and not require PPE and all the other stuff. Your body makes it. Our bodies make it to kill pathogens. And so when you think about electrolytic solutions and think about our bodies and what they're made of, you know, salt, water, and electricity, it really kind of makes a lot of sense. In fact, it's kind of surprising. It's just not everywhere. And when you look into a little bit deeper, it turns out it's a lot more prevalent than we know. It's just called something else.
I'm giving the shout out because the people in agriculture, onions, I've got a really good friend that's in onions root rot is a real problem. Right. And she is a certified organic onion producer. And so this just becomes something that, again, it's not just for cannabis. It's all crops that are being impacted. Especially in a field as we're adding rotation crop and.
We sell it.
And this has the OMRI certification as well. I'm sorry, Tom, go ahead.
That's okay. No, we sell it to indoor grows of every type, tomatoes, flowers. I have a large customer that has a flower nursery, and he buys quite a bit of product from me every year, and he loves this stuff. And it works on banana crops, citrus orchards. There's all kinds of different applications. Each grow has a little bit different problem. Hemp and cannabis have a huge problem with white mold that we can easily take care of that. We have a production facility in Montego Bay, Jamaica, where we sell to all the major growers in Jamaica. And they've tried it on, they get an outbreak of mold, they try it on, they said this is night and day different than what they've been using. Plus it doesn't have any impact on their product. So
it's, by the way, if Tom's not in NoCo, it's because he's coming back from Jamaica.
Leaving again speaks. So.
That's awesome. Tom, how do people get in touch with you if they want to buy AgriLite or if they're interested in distributing or working with you?
Sure. They can call me on my cell number, 563-529-1750, or they can call Tyson. And Tyson, if you want to give out your number, I won't give your number out for you.
Sure. Yeah. Yep, it's 540-556-8658. And then if you want to put emails in there, you Tyson@VirginiaCannabisLawyers.com. Again, that's Tyson@VirginiaCannabisLawyers.com. Tom, do you want to offer email as well?
I will. I'm sure it's tdalton@ruhlcommercial.com.
You guys are fast. I didn't have them prepared for all of your contact info, so I will keep sharing it as you guys keep talking, but just know I'll go ahead and get those posted. But
and we, between Tyson, we can supply product to US and Canada, and in our main office in Kansas City, they'll send us leads that they get, but also we can supply AgriLite, Danalite worldwide. They have facilities across the world and is starting to expand quite a bit in the UK and different regions of the world. So, but in the US, Tyson and I can handle pretty much anything production wise in the US.
Okay, so what type of work's been done as you guys talk about this and the mold issue when we're redding, you know, what type of work potentially has been done for mold prevention during the harvesting process or post-harvesting for fiber and grain, not just cannabinoids?
Well, I could speak a little to that, we've done some product testing, especially for aflatoxin with corn, which is it's a mold. Very dangerous mold if you inhale it. And with everyone that is not eating, if they're gluten-free and they're getting away from flour, they're eating corn-based products. And a lot of that aflatoxin is getting into the food stream, and people who are gluten-free are finding themselves infected or contaminated with the aflatoxin. That's because there's just more and more of it getting into the food stream. So very important that we spray that on the crops to prevent aflatoxin. It's very effective against any type of mold, black mold, powdery white mold. It kills it. It doesn't, a lot of products, they'll smear it around. It doesn't really, isn't that effective, but the AgriLite will kill it. And it's very effective.
Excellent. So Tyson, I've got a question. What are some things that you need, right, or that you really see as opportunity for people to get involved in the supply chain in Virginia, right, through your connections, right? You've got the shelf space development, you've got all of this opportunity. We know that some processors are coming on, but you know, what capacity or volume or off-put, you know, offtake agreements, I guess they have already secured. We're just unsure about. So from your perspective.
Great question. Thank you for asking that. Where to start? I'd say that, you know, first we need the offtakes. And then we have a reason to bring in the processing, to bring in the equipment. Again, there are people that are interested, and maybe even on this live stream, who are interested in being part of the capital investment or being part of, you know, some part of the chain. But what's missing are the contracts, and really that to sort of bring it together, I think that there's going to have to be a work back from retail. Say, okay, what's the demand? Because we're going to have to build a supply that's in equilibrium and with that demand. Because if we go out and spend, you know, $10 million to build a processing facility that can do, you know, thousands and thousands of acres for, you know, tonnage of herd that we haven't sold, then and don't have, you know, a solid prospect to sell, you know, before it's planted, before the crop is planted and the herd is processed to herd, then, you know, it's moot. So if there's a concrete company or a hempcrete company, or, you know, one of the things that Tom and I had worked on was a biomass deal for for a a member of the Global Hemp Association, doing great stuff, and we weren't able to pull it off because of the logistics. And I think you referenced maybe a different deal earlier. So again, there's we need people to communicate together. We need this kind of interaction that's going on right now. So thank you. I thank everyone for that's watching and whoever asked that question.
If you guys are watching, right, you've got any questions, feel free to chime in. This will be recorded. If later on you have questions, don't hesitate to reach out to Tyson, Tom, or myself. They are all recorded, reshared on multiple podcast channels, YouTube, Facebook, social media channels. And so I'm hoping this information gets out, but when it does, let us know where you're chiming in from and what questions you do have.
The other thing I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, keep going. Yeah.
I would just say the other, one other thing that we need, is education. We need our legislators to understand that hemp is different from marijuana. People don't like to use that term anymore either, and that's fine. But psychoactive cannabis, whatever. The point is that they've never seen the crop, and so they just can't picture anything different than what they've been exposed to now, which is hemp flower, which for all intents and purposes, would confuse a cop that's been on the beat for 20 years and has seen all kinds of the icky of the sticky bud, and so you can have some hemp flower that's just glorious looking if that's how you describe good looking buds, but that's just so hemp has become sort of synonymous with that, with the psychoactive side, and not that many people are really familiar, which actually makes a great opportunity for a lot of people who just want to quietly go make a bunch of cash. But for everybody else, it really would be great if legislators knew that, we should have a hemp exemption because nobody's going to be going out and smoking industrial hemp, true industrial hemp.
Yeah. Okay. So speaking of hemp exemption, I'm going to give them a plug too, because there is
absolutely
a hemp exemption out right now to help separate this in policy, right? That gives a definition for the industrial applications or the industrial production of industrial of hemp compared to the cannabinoid production. Go ahead, Tyson.
Well, and that's where maybe my background coming from criminal as a criminal defense lawyer is different from, someone who would come from regulatory practice. Mm-hmm. I don't really have any hesitation knowing what I've experienced in the courtroom over a couple of decades. Mm-hmm. How these cases would shake out if somebody was growing true fiber and grain, and they were worried about being prosecuted for something that's so obviously not an intent to manufacture a Schedule I drug under whatever the federal rubric or even some states still. So, I think that the other thing that's needed is clear regulation, but we don't have that. And in the absence of clear regulation, a reminder that that without clear regulation, our jurisprudence and our constitutional framework says that we don't need laws to tell us that we can do something. We need clear and unambiguous language to tell us what we cannot do. And so I think keeping that in mind helps someone move forward with vigor in an area that they may not really otherwise pursue at all, because they would think, well, they haven't told me I can do this. Well, they're never going to tell you to do it. And by the time they do, everybody else has already done it.
I'll share the exemption plug or the website, because it is something that we should get behind, and it is this definition for production, right? We don't have an opportunity to scale if it is this ambiguous unknown. And I'm sure you've experienced it's capital moves very slow when there's question or there's this big gray area about what can and can't be done.
To Tyson's point with the different connotations of hemp and as opposed to cannabis or whatever, I ran into that in my own company because I wanted to specialize in the hemp farms and investments all related to hemp, and got a little bit of pushback from that. Well, you can't, you know, we don't want to really be associated with that. And I said, you need to educate yourself on what industrial hemp is. Mm-hmm. And I tried to explain that to our broker and people in the office are like, well, you know, they give you kind of the roll their eyeballs a little bit, but it is a, like Tyson said, it's an education process and really would encourage anyone that wanted to get into growing hemp is to get educated, join GHA, do whatever you can to learn as much as you can about the product so you can defend yourself when you, when it comes up in a conversation. Very important.
I want to throw this out really quick. There is a huge grant that's available in Utah right now. And Tom and Tyson, you guys will appreciate this after our conversation and our experience trying to look at land, Tom, in Utah. It's for a few hundred million dollars, maybe $350 million. It's focused on the coal and natural gas, you know, oil and mining towns that have then been impacted by the reduction of that industry or of fracking and stuff. And I've attended multiple, you know, webinars recently about the grant, and I submitted some questions specifically about considering industrial hemp processing to support a plastics manufacturer that's down there as offtake agreements. And they responded and said that they would be interested in learning more if I was interested in collaborating on on a biofuels project for sunflower seed, but they have no interest in hemp. And I was like, oh, so I responded, you know, about the values. I had just published an article about biofuels and the benefit to hemp seed compared to sunflower seed or some of these other materials. And I said, I'd be willing to be an education, you know, outlet for you to understand what we're talking about. But their response was they will not tolerate or they have no interest in THC or CBD. Even after the response. So immediately the word hemp was linked. And here, you know, it's a Department of Energy grant that came down. And so I'm sure that this is not just in Utah or available in Utah, but they're focused on, you know, remediation projects and energy projects and sustainability projects and climate smart commodity projects. And still the people.
And they should be concentrated on the hemp plant. For all of those things, it's shocking on one level. On the other, it's not at all. It's sort of par for the course. I mean,
I just think it's reality, right? And an eye opener for me about how far behind certain areas are. You know, if they have a more reserved community or a culture that is very that isn't, you know, as centered around cannabis or alternative medicines or things like that, it is definitely more difficult to start conversation with the people that are making decisions about distribution of those funds or property sales or whatever is involved on the policy side.
Yeah, well, and that's enormously frustrating for all of us. And I think the best way back to the point about communicating with each other and having this kind of discourse, again, thank you for having us, is so important so that we can reinforce each other so that we don't just get frustrated and say, oh, you know, forget it, we're gonna go do something else. Because it running up against the same brick wall over and over, makes one question quite rightly their sanity. At the same time, that's how they get knocked over walls, that is.
Okay, so when we talk about solutions, right, because we see companies and groups that are coming together and creating supply chains and offtake agreements and things like that, talk to me about the consulting side of your businesses and talk to me about what's offered. What specifically are you looking for, Tom, when it comes to project development or that you're seeing customers that are clients that, you know, what do they need in order to get over these barriers?
Now, there's four areas that we try to put together with our different consultants, and both Tyson and I have people that we consult with all over the country, but we put together a pretty solid team that experts in licensing, compliance, grant applications, what's legal or illegal in your state as one. So there's all the paperwork that's involved, and I have different groups that specialize in licensing and compliance and so on. And then the cultivation side and getting involved with seed companies and their hybrids, equipment sources, because harvesting and planting hemp requires totally different equipment than planting corn or soybeans. So that's a whole other area. There's just all the different types of things that enter into actually growing the hemp. And then there's the marketing side and making sure that a lot of hemp farmers made this mistake. They grew all this hemp and were all excited about it, but then they didn't have anyone to buy it. So they ended up getting stuck. Now a lot of them are a little nervous about it. So we have to kind of work backwards and find end users. And I know, Mandy, you've been really involved in the apparel industry and locating some end users for fiber. So there's the marketing, the finding end users, and then finding the right supply chain with transportation, so we can link up our growers with the transportation services and getting their products to market, having the end user or having an offtake agreement in advance before they put one seed in the ground. So there's a team that we've kind of assembled that can help in each of those different areas.
And there seems to be a regulation or a license required for just about every one of those, whether it's a professional service license or whether it's a permit for transportation or a permit to grow. So,
yeah, exactly. There's lots of moving pieces here. So earlier, Tyson, you talked about offtake agreements and the need for offtake agreements. I kind of want to dive in while we have a few minutes left to your region, right? And what can we do to really get things moving? You are very well connected from, you know, major brands that have the shelf space. Is it securing processing partnerships as well? You know, outside of those contracts, is it a contract with, say, a box or paper company?
Well, let's say, yes, exactly. Great, fantastic example. Or let's say, an animal feed company, mm-hmm. right? And we were going to grow a tri-crop for a grain. And let's assume for a second that we have a change under Virginia law that allows hemp for human consumption, for animals, for livestock, for human consumption, and it has a state GRAS designation. Let's just dream on that for a second. But and I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility. Maybe not this year. We'll see.
We're seeing that, like Kentucky, right? And we're seeing other states open up for feed.
Because they already said that to the FDA with respect to edibles. Uh-huh. They've said, the Commonwealth has said, we're going to allow we don't care what FDA says. They didn't say we don't care what FDA says, but irrespective of what FDA says, we're going to allow CBD and edibles in Virginia. And that's it, full stop.
Yeah.
I think that there's a strong movement, and I think maybe even some legislation, hopefully, that will make it happen, that will say the same thing to the USDA. We're going to allow our farmers to feed their livestock. You know, Virginia is no longer, I don't think, but at one point was the turkey capital of the world. And so, the Shenandoah Valley is, absolutely ripe for that. So if we had offtake agreements, you know, just for that, then it would provide the basis for the investment required to bring the machinery in, to set up the processing, to grow the crop, to fulfill the contract.
And in the meantime, we've got to have samples so that they can try it or do. I mean, I can't tell you how long I've been working on some horse agreements that were on sample, you know, size. We started with small samples so they could grasp the concept and educate, to a, you know, couple of stalls, to a full, you know, facility now expanding. But it really has been a trial and error to prove the value or the benefit that hemp brings in comparison to some of these other materials.
Well, here's an easy, for example, though, with respect to animal feed, and this is, yeah, this sort of brings the agrolite back into it. It's a nice, yeah, dovetail. I'll kick it back over to Tom in a sec, but you know, there evidently approximately 60% of the loss in the swine industry occurs when the piglets are going off of weaning and onto grain. Well, what grain? Guaranteed it's not hemp seed. If it were, there would be significantly less loss in the swine industry, and there are some studies on that. So, you know, that alone would save huge money all the way to retail, just on that aspect alone, much less increase the health of the pig, the hogs, to have, you know, more yield. And that bringing back to agrolite, you know, the seed wash, as a seed wash, increasing germination rates and the health of the plant, you know, you've got something that working in tandem with reasonable legislation and not toxic for the environment, you know, stuff that on one level is kind of surprising that it's not everywhere, because if it were, there would be so many products that wouldn't be out there.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of amazing to me also that hemp grain is considered grass for us to consume, but not for animals. Like, that blows my mind.
Yeah, go figure.
It's
sort of like, you know, our statutes here in Virginia right now that, you know, allow people to have a home grow, but say that seeds are illegal to sell.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes Tom, zero sense.
That's, you know, just add?
All the same lines as with all the different uses for hemp. I mean, we've got building materials, which you introduced us to some very interesting people that were building, yeah, doing insulation, building materials. There's food sources, all kinds of different uses, and in the apparel industry, which is going to be under a lot of pressure to do renewable fabric, because it's a huge contributor to a landfill, and they're going to be under a lot of pressure to start using hemp products and things that are more recyclable and renewable. But even with agrolite, danolite in the poultry industry, if you start looking at all the different uses, it can help increase the weight of chickens and birds in a confinement area. But also, it can stop the spread of bird flu, which is very costly. I know Virginia, they've taken a huge hit in the turkey industry. Mm-hmm. And just trying to get our product, just to have someone from the FDA or anyone trying to return a phone call. And here we have a product sitting on our shelf that can help save hundreds of millions of dollars in the poultry industry. So it's kind of the same frustration that you might feel with hemp is the same frustration we feel getting on the shelf and getting people to use it. They see a brand name, brand X, something they're familiar with, they'll keep trying that, and all they're doing is smearing around the problem. We're killing it. So same, there's a parallel there. So.
Well, and, you know, I hear what you're saying, too, because I listened to a conversation recently from somebody in the auto manufacturing space, and the number one killer for quality of a hemp fiber or natural fiber into one of their lines is mold and color. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I just think that speaks really high to opportunity on every level, you know, of the supply chain, from you know, in-field production or preparation to home grows to, yeah, the readying and manufacturing process. I'm really curious. And the big thing is the organic side, right? Like you said, really needing to move to more natural, yeah, where it's bushes. Tyson, there's a quick question. I don't know if you can answer this, or maybe you guys connect offline, but Paul's asking from Ecuador. He says, quick question. Ecuador must plant less than 1% THC hemp. And if it goes hot, can we export as toxic waste? Remediated THC can be sold to the U.S.?
Tyson, you could take
that. I wouldn't export any. I generally speaking, I'm not sure that that's phrased as he meant it, but I wouldn't export anything that's toxic, and I wouldn't want to import anything that's toxic.
It's labeled as toxic, right?
Yeah. Although to the point about the remediation, I had just written it down, so maybe he was reading my mind on that score. Absolutely, a wonderful application for industrial hemp, and in fact, a necessary one for the coalfields region of Virginia and other places where there are brownfields, but particularly in the coalfields where you have these strip mines and other other areas that are off limits as brownfields. You couldn't give them away, and so that seems to me to be a way underutilized application. Now, what you do with the crop after the fact, biochar is probably often the lowest and least use, but in this case, it may be perfect for it. Thanks for the question.
And I'll share the contact information again, Paul, if you guys want to connect or if you have specific questions that maybe didn't get answered. Paul's group, Ananda's, got some good stuff going in Ecuador and has really been pushing and actively involved. But I'm curious too, on the remediation side, I'd love to, there's tons, like you said, grant money that's available and collateral from the government for the remediation in the oil field and gas communities.
Yeah, big time. And in fact, I think if you go county by county, or in a state region by state region, depending on, Virginia has the coalfield region. It's made up of several counties. And so the Coalfield Economic Development Authority, good people, and I think that they're probably pretty well funded. Oftentimes looking for projects. And so, I can't speak for them. I'm surmising but based on some limited experience.
Lots of education needed, however, right?
Indeed. Yes.
So guys, how do we, as people are looking to get involved, right, and have questions and are really looking to put projects together or have connections in your area, either from the ag side or in Virginia looking for processing or getting involved selling the picks and shovels. That's an analogy I heard years ago and it stuck with me. So, but who are those people? Who fits in those boxes right now? Of perfect contacts. If people are listening and they're like, I've got somebody out in Virginia, I'm really well connected here. Who fits in that box for you, Tyson? And then Tom, same for you. Is it a sales, is it distribution channels? Is it the farmers themselves?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tom.
There's just as far as land, I have brokers in all parts of the country that I work with that I don't have to re-educate them. I've already kind of given them an education on what I'm looking for in hemp ground. So I can call people Colorado or Indiana, Utah. I have two brokers I work with in Utah that find stuff for me. Someone says, I need a 500 acres of land in Utah. I can come up with it. So I've got a good network of people to find land. And then between Tyson and I, on the other side of our interest would be the disinfectant side, which includes AgriLite and Danalite, which There's so many applications like hemp. It just, there's so many applications that people, if they stop for a second to realize, you know, you can make railroad ties out of hemp, and you're creating, you're solving some problems. You're not creating problems with creosote and so that, and so on and so on. So among Tyson and I can put people together with people in all different areas of consulting and so on.
And I'm going to give a plug real quick. Tom killed it there. I reached out to Tom and he helped someone that was part of the association looking to put some processing together, find multiple pieces of land that fit right in the specs of what they were looking for, and quickly. So Tom, thank you very much. I just give you a major props. And I've said it a lot of time to other people on the land side, and your experience in the ag side makes a major impact. You know, when we talk about looking for, yeah, investment property or land. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tyson, talk to me.
Well, I'll throw a bone to Tom too. Plus he's an easygoing cat. You know, when we met in Kansas, you know, had a good time hanging out. So Tom, will look forward to catching up in person again. For me, you know, I was thinking about that. I had probably five different answers pop in my head, but I think based on what Tom just said, curious people is probably the shortest answer and has the broadest net, because I never know who's going to call and what project's going to drop out of the sky. But if people are looking into this and willing to educate themselves, and a great question from Paul, and appreciated that, look forward to making contact with Ecuador. So, you know, people who have interests in, you know, moving forward, I'd say not anyone who's not kicking tires.
Well, I think that's a big thing, right? Is we've got to be serious, you know, as we build this network. And this is why I ask who fits inside that box, because if I'm interested and I'm brand new getting into the industry and you're looking for an impact investor, right? I want to make sure that we're making good connections. And that I say that also because it's not just who we as listeners know, but who, you know, who's in our network that may be able to also help Tom and Tyson or help move projects forward. And so that's really part of why I do this, is looking at, you know, who else do we know that we can connect people to, not just what I'm looking for initially. And really, I think that's how this is going to grow. Tyson, I'd love to talk more about the processing in Virginia. I think that it is, you know, this is that reoccurring question of putting that supply chain together and who is that contract or that company that's going to get behind it and say, when you produce this spec or this product at this spec, then we're going to buy, so that then we can take that back to the investor. Joe Hickey talks about this all the time and does a great job explaining it, right? If we can go into, say, a Toyota or a large paper company and say, you know, when we meet the spec, you're going to buy, it gives power and validity back to the infrastructure development or the investment, right?
Absolutely. And in fact, thank you for mentioning that, because I will say that if there's anyone connected with Volvo, BMW or Boeing that's watching and has facilities in Virginia, South Carolina or Georgia, respectively, you know, there's a reason to talk for sure.
Well, let me tell you, Boeing is on our radar here in Utah also. So, you know, these grants that come down for advanced manufacturing, hemp fits right into. No, and that's another thing, is like looking outside of our industry, hemp is this resource to increase, you know, improve supply chain, decrease carbon footprint, all the things we talked about. And there is money available that may not say hemp, but definitely, you know, fitting in. And now a matter of the education piece.
Big time. We've got the Golden Leaf money in Virginia, which is the tobacco settlement money, which is, the counties are still sitting on. So they can use that for these projects. We've got the old textile mills right along the North Carolina, Virginia border that are just empty. You know, the equipment unbolted and shipped overseas. So the buildings are here.
Yes. Okay. Well, it gets me excited. Okay. No, it's this love-hate relationship, right? It gets me excited. It's just a reality of there's a lot of work. We talk about the education piece and buttoning up the package that makes the education deliverable, right? That when we get into a meeting where there's a $350 million grant and immediately they see hemp and they think THC or CBD, mm-hmm. It's an all new ball game and needs to be like an aha moment of, oh, hemp is carbon sequestration, hemp is remediation, hemp is composite. Well,
I think maybe, you know, bringing in a bag of, you know, flavored, you know, hemp seeds or something, you know, that yeah. people can pass around and because, you know, that brings it home in a yes. way that, you know, people don't really get otherwise. And that's fair.
Or wear your hemp T-shirt into the meeting.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I wore my T-shirt on the way home from Kansas, and I got more weird looks walking through the airport. And I thought, gosh, you know, I've been in a lot of places and deserve much stranger looks than this. Anyway.
It's this love-hate. It either draws a lot of attention and sparks conversation, or people are like, whoa, back up from her.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, you know, they have no problem with, you know, the T-shirt that says this bud's for you and, you know, somebody throwing back a beer. Okay. That is a double entendre now, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. Now that you say that, I have one more question. Are you guys still doing anything with microgreens? Yeah. Awesome.
Absolutely.
I'd love to learn more. I'd love to actually do something, invite back and do a Q&A where we get logged in with a group of say 30, 40, 50 people and start drumming up conversation, kind of roundtable style. If you guys would be interested, we could put it on the calendar in a couple of months where we actually see people on Zoom face-to-face, create the event. Because I think we could dive in a lot more and just drum up some real questions on the ag side about AgriLite and then the, you know, business opportunity available in Virginia. So
that sounds awesome. I'm up for it. Awesome.
Okay.
Anyone would like to see our production machines, Tyson has one in Virginia. I have one in Iowa. And if you'd rather go see the one in Jamaica, that's probably a little warmer than it is here.
I tried to make it to Jamaica and failed. So,
well, I'm your tour guide.
Thank you. Thank you so much, you guys. I sure appreciate it. Again, if there's any questions, don't hesitate to reach out. Contact information is shared throughout the video, and I will share it in the description. So if you're listening to this offline or when we're no longer live, you will have it. Other than that, thank you guys, everybody, for joining, or thanks, everybody, for joining. Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Tyson. I really appreciate you.
Great job, as usual.
Absolutely. We'll see you guys next time.
Thank you.
Thanks.